C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Here's your money briefing for Wednesday, November 24th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The IPO market is hot. So far this year alone, more than 900 companies have gone public, raising nearly $300 billion. Typically, Wall Street's biggest investors have been on the short list of groups that can buy shares before the public does, but now more companies are opening that door a little wider for individual investors.
They showed that they had the cash, they had the interest, and the education to want to go in and buy up certain names.
And while the rewards from getting in on IPO shares can be high, so can the risks. In a moment, we'll check with our markets reporter, Corey Driebusch, about red flags that smaller investors need to watch out for before and after a company's shares hit the public market. That's after the break.
C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This year, the number of publicly listed companies in the U.S. rose above 4,000 for the first time in more than a decade. And a big part of that is the white-hot initial public offering, or IPO market, where companies have been going public at record valuations. What's also rising is the number of companies giving individual investors an opportunity to buy in as they go public. But what risks do smaller investors in IPOs face? Here to walk us through it is WSJ Markets reporter Corey Driebusch. Hi, Corey. Thanks for being with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, Corey, the IPO market is on fire now, but it wasn't always the hot ticket on Wall Street. And for a long time, retail investors had virtually no access to that market, right?
Yes. For many years, at least over the past decade or so, the retail investors, if you wanted to buy an IPO, unless you have a brokerage account with one of the banks on the deal, you really don't have a shot at getting at the IPO price. You would have to buy the next day once it starts trading, and then you are subject to how it trades. And even if you did have a brokerage account, in general, IPOs, when they allocate or when they assign shares to investors in the IPO, maybe 10% would go to individual investors, but rarely any more than that.
Yeah, now we're seeing retail investors getting more of a seat at the table. More companies are carving out shares for the little guy, in addition to the larger blocks of shares for the bigger investors. Why are they doing that?
Well, it sort of has to do a lot with just the trend we've seen all year of individual investors becoming a more powerful voice in the stock market. Think of even just this past winter with all the meme stocks, and individual investors showed that when they banded together, they could move markets and inflict some painful losses on big investors. And they showed that they had the cash, they had the interest and the education to want to go in and buy up certain names. So brokerages like Robinhood and SoFi took advantage of that. And they started rolling out platforms to offer individual investors access. And Robinhood famously rolled this out right before its own IPO and then offered in its IPO, they said they were going to offer up to 35% of the stock of their offering to individual investors. In the end, up to 25% actually went to individual investors. But as I said, for years, less than 10% was going to individual investors. So that's significantly more.
All right, let's get into the details of how this works. In the current IPO market, how are shares made available to smaller investors?
Let's take Rivian, for example, Rivian Automotive, the biggest IPO of the year. It just happened earlier this month. A lot of people wanted to buy that stock because they understand electric vehicles. That's the hot thing. Look at Tesla's stock and how that's performed over the years since its IPO. And Rivian has made a lot of big promises about they're doing electric trucks and SUVs. So if you wanted to buy that stock, Rivian made it available to individuals a couple different ways. The first way was anyone who had pre-ordered an electric truck or SUV was given the option, you can sign up with Morgan Stanley, the Morgan Stanley brokerage, the bank that happened to be leading the IPO, and say you can individually sign up and put in an order for up to 175 shares in the IPO. So an individual investor could have done it that way. They also, Rivian also decided to open up access even more. They would make available a certain percentage of shares through SoFi, the brokerage. So anyone, even if you had never pre-ordered a car, you could sign up through your SoFi account and request a certain number of shares. You might not get them all. And most individual investors I talked to around that IPO didn't get as many as they wanted, but they got some, which again is unusual. You wouldn't have seen that happen a few years ago. And then all of them were able to buy the stock at the IPO price. And they found out about it from individual investors I talked to at around midnight before the stock started trading.
All right, so let's shift to when the company first trades publicly, after the opening bell on the first day of trading. There's usually a lot of attention and fanfare. Can you talk a bit about what the expectations for investors typically are at that point?
Once the bell is rung, everyone cheers. It's broadcast on everyone's television sets. Then anyone can put in orders if you got the stock in the IPO or not. You can put in a buy order. You could put in, sometimes people who bought in the IPO decide, you know what, I'd like to sell. Could happen. And then you wait for the orders to be matched and it's a start trading. This can take hours. A lot of stocks don't open for trading until 1 p.m. in the afternoon, even though the stock market opens at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. But what happens that first day of trading, not all stocks go up in the IPO. There have been plenty that have gone down. But many, if they do go up, the first day has the potential to be a lot of the gains. And that's just what we've seen, especially for hot IPOs, especially for consumer brand IPOs, basically any IPO that is hot in the eyes of the consumer. Let's use Rivian as the example, the electric vehicle maker. So they priced their shares on November 9th, that evening, at $78 a share. The first day of trading, it jumped up and closed at over $100 a share. So that is a big increase. And if you had bought at the open, it actually, the stock went up even more than that during the day and ended up closing at $100. So if you had bought during the day, you might have actually seen a loss the first day if you hadn't gotten at the IPO price of $78. So that's just one of the ways that individual investors can be disadvantaged if they're not able to buy at the IPO price.
Okay, so first day of trading, we often see a flurry of stock price changes, and there's a run-up, and sometimes the price comes down. How does that compare to long-term performance trends? And what are the risks involved there, especially for individual investors?
Typically, most years, if you look at the basket of companies that went public, and if you bought them all, and you held them all through the end of the year, typically, that return will be bigger than the S&P 500 on average. Obviously, some years are different than others. But as with anything, that involves not quickly selling and in trying to time the market. And as any individual investor who probably reads the Wall Street Journal hopefully knows, the recommendation by most financial advisors is don't try to time the market. So that's the benefit of IPOs, if you can get the IPO price. And that's only if you can get the IPO price, which is one of the reasons for a long time there's been this feeling. And I quoted for my story recently, I quoted an individual investor who was saying he grew up thinking IPOs are where the rich people put their money. And it was only recently that he actually bought his first IPO at IPO price, because there's this feeling, probably rightfully so, that you can't get in. And it's just how maybe the rich get richer by getting to participate, but most people can't do it.
You know, Corey, we hear a lot about special purpose acquisition companies, or SPACs, and a growing number of companies going public fall into that category. But help us understand these for a moment. Let's start with, what are SPACs?
So SPACs, as you mentioned, special purpose acquisition companies, it's a lot to swallow. They're basically shell companies, and they go public and raise money with the sole purpose of merging with a private company and bringing it public so that another company that's private that maybe wants to be traded can take over the ticker symbol and suddenly be traded on the stock exchange. So when you put money into a SPAC, you are trusting the people who lead that SPAC to find a good company and to get a good deal on that company.
Okay, and what are some red flags regarding SPACs that investors should be aware of?
So this has been a busy year for these quote-unquote blank check companies. But one of the things that needs to be remembered when you're buying them is that there are different regulatory rules right now around SPACs. And I think that the SEC is looking at these. However, for now, if you are merging with a SPAC as a company, you're allowed to give forward projections. And often they give pretty rosy forward projections, which is something in a traditional IPO you're not allowed to do. So there's a lot of feeling that there could be maybe exaggerated claims in some of these situations.
Is anything being done to make things more transparent?
So the SEC has warned that it might require some SPACs to restate their financial results. And that has kind of put the brakes on some of these offerings. Basically, has become aware of some of these, as I said before, more rosy or overly optimistic revenue projections used by startups that are merging with SPACs.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal markets reporter Corey Drebusch. Corey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before we go, a quick programming note. We'll be off tomorrow for Thanksgiving, but we'll be back on Friday with a new episode of Your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.